stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here with us on this Sunday morning, 11 o'clock here. Sunday morning wake-up call. That's where we get our name. We're going to have guests with us, Pam Moran and Chance Dickerson, as we talk about contemporary education for the K through 12 kids. Pam Moran, with her new title, no longer the superintendent of Albemarle County Schools, she has grown, expanded her group. She is now the executive director of the Virginia School Consortium for Learning. You're really testing my proper pronunciation there. Virginia School Consortium for Learning. What's that all about, Executive Director Miss Moran?
Good morning, Rick. It is always a delight to be with you, and I never know how you're going to start a program, but it's always with something that gets my attention. So I finalized my work at Albemarle County Public Schools on the last day in June that was a full school week, and began the work with the Virginia School Consortium for Learning, formerly known as the Virginia School University Partnership, on July 14th. And I'll be working with somewhere close to 70 school divisions across the state of Virginia. And the wheelhouse that is most important for that group is providing high-quality professional development for educators across those districts or divisions, as well as being able to help them with high-quality assessment work and to be sure that everybody that's out there are making the connections they need to make, particularly right now. And I know you've heard this a lot in the Albemarle news feed, that the state has this thing called Profile of the Graduate for the state of Virginia that says that the outcomes that we want for high school students graduating are going to look very different than perhaps the outcomes were of 2000 or 1990 or even 1950, that there's more to what kids have to be able to do than just be able to recall knowledge and apply some basic skills, that kids today, and this is kind of the what's known as the five C's of the Profile of the Graduate, is that we want our kids to be creators. And so creativity is important for them to develop as they're moving through school and sustain. We want them to be great critical thinkers. We want them to be collaborative, to know how to work in teams, to work with other people, to be great communicators. And in this day and age, great communication, and you'll hear about a little bit of that from Chance, guest with us today, that communication needs today goes far beyond just sort of I need to be able to read, I need to be able to talk, I need to be able to write, to a variety of different ways that we communicate, including what we're doing right now, which is a podcast. And then lastly, something that was really important for the state of Virginia is the fifth C, and that is citizenship. And I think we would all agree that in this day and age, having our kids become more effective members of our communities as they move out into adulthood, as well as becoming participating citizens in our democracy, is absolutely critical. And, of course, then, beyond that, we still in Virginia expect kids to have good knowledge of the content areas that we think are important, as well as the competencies that we think will help them be successful in work, college, life. So that's what I'm all about, is trying to support that effort up.
Is there some days when we can have citizenship be the first C?
I think we could all probably agree that citizenship is right at the top of the list of priorities in this day and age.
As you mentioned, our second guest today is Chance Dickerson, a teacher, correct, at Murray High School?
Chance is one of our members of our technical education suite of educators. So, and he's at Murray High School now.
At Murray High School?
He's not technically a teacher anymore. And so instead of it being the traditional title of teacher, I'm a facilitator, because the role that I serve in working with kids, it's it has a lot different cultural responsibility and impact than a traditional classroom teacher would have. And I think that the title of teacher is still a very important title to have in education. But the way that education is going right now, especially in Elmore County, I think that facilitation is a vital element of directing resources and creating new pathways for our children to not only get a proper education and reach graduation and you know, and looking into going to college, but also, like, how do I navigate from the classroom, from that desk in the classroom, to a job, to a life of stability and really promise. And I think you talked about citizenship being, can we make that the first C? I think that's brilliant, because citizenship is the ultimate goal, but it requires those other C's in order to become the fruitful citizen see that we are looking for.
And Chad, I think that your new boss, who made you an offer you couldn't refuse, because I know how much you've loved Albemarle High School.
I loved it, yeah.
But he's really looking for someone to have a transformative effect across all of the teachers in Murray and the community charter, as well as with the students. And so you're going to be a specific role, but to be in a role of really supporting up both kids and teachers around what you might call these five C's, or what we call our lifelong learning competencies.
Yeah, so Chad Ratliff, the principal at Murray High School and Community Middle, was really, he's served an enormously important role in my life and in my professional life as well. And so I think him getting to know me over the last 6 years of my work at Albemarle High School, he sort of was the behind the scenes director of a lot of the programs that I was trying to establish, and him knowing my personality, knowing my skill set and my temperament, when he asked me to come to Murray, he really created, as you know, observing it now, the perfect setting for someone like me to work with kids. And a lot of that involved taking some of the traditional limitations off of the work that I do, things like grading, things like testing, and giving me really freedom and liberty to design workflow, to design systems, and to design a culture that serves students not only to give them the needs that they desire, but also to give me a means to provide resources and time and opportunities according to my strengths.
Yeah, and you know, Chance, I can name kid after kid that I've come to know through your work at Albemarle High School. Kids that, you know, in some cases, you know, are really fabulous students by any measure, whether it's AP courses or band performance or whatever. And kids that really struggle in school, and who in some cases have been really at risk for maybe not even finishing high school.
Yeah.
And when they find their way to the work that you've done, that started as a sound studio, a music studio, and has kind of morphed into a way of kids finding out who they are from a more entrepreneurial perspective, you've picked up a lot of kids who find their way to your studio and say, what can I do here? And you look at them and say, what do you want to make? What do you want to do? And you figure out how to make that happen for those kids.
Let's talk about that real quick. Pam, I want to get into your retirement and how retirement leads to being an executive director of a large program. But Chance, let's talk about, because Chad's not here, let's talk to Chance. But Chance, Pam mentions this program that you've been doing. So let's talk about that. I'm sure there's some listeners going, why is this gentleman here on the studio? What is, and let's mention it, the A3 House, the Albemarle Alternative Arts House, the school's first accredited audio production program, correct?
Right.
How old is it? What does it do? And Dr. Moran mentions it as something that caught the attention of some students who might otherwise not have been paying any attention at school, or at least that's how I interpreted what she was saying.
Yeah, the A3 House is a very special place, and one of the One of the best parts of A3 House is that it is a living program. And I say that meaning it's not an established program with this identity that requires permanence and concrete or static characteristics. It's living in the sense that it follows the needs and the desires and the passion and creativity of the children that come to the program. So a little bit of history of A3 House. It started in 2014. Actually, it started...
in a closet.
It started in the closet. Now, depending on who you talk to, Trevor Przeszke, who's Alamar High School's TV production and all-thing video teacher, director, artist, filmmaker, he had this program years ago after school where he would work with kids making music. So if you ask him, he sort of laid, established the first ideas of having something like music production in school. In 2011, when I started working at Alamar High School as a teaching assistant, I was working in the ESOL program, and there were a lot of kids that liked to... ESOL, E-S-O-L.
E-S-O-L. Don't assume that everybody who's listening...
English as a second language, right. or other language.
Don't assume everybody knows all the slang
teacher
words,
jargon and lingo. Yeah. I should be wise because I had to learn a lot of that myself. The first couple of professional meetings, I was kind of like, what are people talking about? Yeah, what is this ESOL?
I'm married to a teacher assistant principal, and I'm like, what?
Yeah. But there were these children in the English for Speakers of Other Languages program, and these are for kids who have just come to the United States and are just trying to learn English and some of the basic skills interpreted through our American culture and learning systems. And so my way of connecting with someone who I don't speak the same language as is I'm trying to find a common language. And a lot of times it's music, because I think music is a universal language, even if it has a difference in genre or a difference in quality or color. But so I would have these ESOL students meet during lunch and play guitar and sing and would record them in the upstairs book closet, English book closet at Alamar High School. And mind you, this closet is like...
I'm laughing at the closet, not the work.
Yeah, so imagine taking where we are right now and putting it into a closet.
In the closet. It was about the size of the studio, actually. And it was full of books and literature. And so... but I didn't know at the time. Now, granted, this is my first year ever being, in a school full time as an employee. So I do not know. A lot of what I say is always tied to culture, and culture in a very wide sense. So I do not know the teaching culture of a school, and I do not know the culture of the specific department in which I'm holding this underground studio in their book closet. English teachers in the school at the time, they really valued that space as their quiet space where they would go for their lunch break and when they wanted to get away and decompress. So mind you, there were several times there would be a teacher opening the door to come and de-stress in their quiet space, and you see Chance Dickerson and a bunch of kids making music and singing and playing guitar. And so I actually ended up annoying quite a few teachers.
You were not a popular dude.
At that point, I started to see that the route that I'm taking my style of learning may grant me some tension. And so, but the great thing was that Jay Thomas, the principal at the time, he recognized some of what I was doing, and he had already had some plans with Pam and Ira Sokol and Chad Ratliff to install a studio in the school, and so he gave me this opportunity to manage a studio space. And again, I have no idea what the studio space is supposed to look like. They gave me a computer lab. It was a computer lab. They took all the computers out.
Kind of an empty room.
It was just an empty room. They installed a big window in the front so you could monitor children inside, and they said, make it a studio. So I started out with a laptop, audio interface, MIDI keyboard, and some speakers. And there's a picture on my Instagram of my first day, and I have like this laptop, this audio interface, and some speakers set up in an empty room.
And no class.
No class, no one there, and I take a picture, and I'm just like, and it's genuine. I'm excited because I'm like, on my Instagram shot, I'm like, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to work in this amazing studio for the next, 10 months of my life. And I just can't wait to make memories. And so a lot of my teacher friends like make fun of me. They say, look at this empty room and you think that it's like golden, but there's like something special about that mentality that Almar High School, Almar Public Schools, actually, they have a way of finding the right people that can look at something that doesn't seem like much, but through their lens and through their creative lens, they can see what it can become.
So Rick, one of the things that's a theme of the book that I know you want to talk a little bit about us with Chance and us is that there are three words that really we think are timeless words when it comes to developing and building and making and engineering and designing learning that's responsive to kids. And one of them is that you've got to be able to have people that have a real sense of imagination. And you can go for years and years and years and not have somebody walk into a school and say, I can connect with these kids who are other language learners, the English language learners, and connect with them through music and just find a place to do this studio. So that imagination is a real important theme. The other one is observation, and Chance is an incredible observer of kids. He doesn't move in to tell a kid what to do when they come in to him. He watches them and figures out, how can I support this student up to accomplish the things that they're dreaming they want to accomplish? And that may be photography or barbering, right, or music at this point in time.
I want to back up a little bit because being an artist and being, a very creative thinker, a lot of times my language can become extravagant and I can start, really trying to paint this detailed picture, even though the question's asked something very specific, requires a very specific answer. So to go back to what A3 House is, it's an audio production it was established as an audio production program in Almar High School. Over 4 years, it evolved given the kinds of students that were in there and the types of projects that they desire to work on. It evolved into a creative incubator. In 2016, Bernard Hankins was brought in. He's an architect out of UVA, and he has an extensive background in music and poetry and art. And so we collaborated to create the school's first record label called A3 House Records. And so it became this home for kids who desire to express themselves in a variety of diverse ways, from audio production to video to art, dance,
Barbering.
I mean, we have a lot of stories, and that the barbering element, that's a really beautiful story. That took place a couple of years ago, but the program evolved from the audio production studio to the creative incubator to a incubator for students to really launch entrepreneurial ideas. And that's in a nutshell what A3 House is, and it's located in Almar High School and operated by students.
And it will continue onward because Bernard,
right,
will be there, but you're going to take some of those concepts, and hopefully, I mean, we've got some of that work going at Monticello High School, out at Western Albemarle, and some of our middle schools. Chance talks about Chad Ratliff, who's one of the three folks that co-authored with us. And Chad, when he came to Albemarle, I knew had a real entrepreneurial mindset. He wanted to figure out, how is it that we can support up education as a place where people get to really, teachers and kids get to think of themselves as entrepreneurs, to be able to really create and even be able to market new ideas out there that are critical. Chance is an example of that. We have them all over the system. What I really learned is, as I worked with Chad, is that he, like Chance, was able to see beyond the horizon. And so he ended up with a major as director of not just innovation for Albemarle through instructional work, but also as a person who managed a multi-million dollar STEM grant to implement STEM through particularly maker work across the entire school division. And so we started to see people pop up in every school with ideas of what they wanted to do around work that they imagined and never probably had imagined that they could do until some of this synergy started happening.
Our guest today here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, Dr. Pam Moran. She's moved on from Albemarle County Superintendent to be the Executive Director at the Virginia School Consortium for Learning. And we also have Chance Dickerson. He's a facilitator at Murray High School, and we're talking about his A3 house that he set up at Albemarle High School, the Albemarle Alternative Arts House. Pretty cool sounding place to be making music. Hang tight. Be right back. All right, back in action here at WPVC 94.7. Hope you're enjoying the sounds like I am, and hope you want to go check out Albemarle High School's A3 house. My question for Chance is, what if I go to one of the other high schools? Am I jealous because I can't make music at that school? Do I have to ask for permission to take the class that allows me to go to Albemarle, to go to the A3 house? What about that?
Well, one of the wonderful things about this county right now is that it's really embraced, the corporate term is Maker Ed, but Maker Ed is really an umbrella of locating or discovering pockets of creative engineering that is existing at any school and every school, because it's really found in the minds of kids and teachers in those schools. So if you go to any high school in Albemarle County right now, you'll find a place to make music, to create, to engineer, to express. David Glover, who actually started, I believe, the county's first true audio production studio at Monticello High School. It was 4 years before A3 House, and his program was geared more towards digital media, so music and video. He was one of the people that really inspired me to work with kids in the way that I work with kids, and really gave me a lot of encouragement. And so you can find similar programs at Monticello High School. You can find similar programs in terms of farming and building at Western. There's no place right now, and it's beautiful in this county, that a child will go and not find a place for them to be themselves and explore what they would desire to do, either professionally or out of just pure pleasure. And I think that's the result of the county as a whole, as an entity, this county school system, promoting this sort of learning across the entire board.
And the reality is that, you know, while, you know, I describe the book Timeless Learning as being a narrative of educators and students and people inside and outside the system, some that I've known at different points in my career, as well as others, that one of the things that I think is really important about it is that it's a narrative of people who have taken risk to continue to grow and develop and to think about, what if we really tried something that was substantively different to give kids a different learning path? And if we do that, rather than coming up with the yeah buts, how is it that we really go after saying, what if we tried this? How could we support this up? How can we give our educators and our learners opportunities to take risk, to learn on different pathways than just the pathways that I had when I was a student back in the 1950s?
This is the project versus the textbook style learning,
mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
That we're talking about, correct?
Yes, it is definitely a project focus, and there are many, many educators across Albemarle who are contributors to this story. And it doesn't mean that you still won't find tradition, because there are many great things about the traditions of education. Yeah. That I will tell you, if you go to our history classes, you'll find some of the best storytellers that you can find anywhere in the country. And history, we know that one of the ways that humans learn best is through story. So you have our history teachers who are great storytellers. In the tradition of teaching history, you have English language arts teachers who are writers in their own right, who make literature come alive with kids. So those are things that are still critically a part of the work that we do. But we also recognize that there are kids that come to school. We talk about one of Chance's earliest students that came in and discovered the A3 house, who we did not think was going to graduate from high school. And he literally turned it on, and I'll never forget him getting credit for a science class project in which he wrote a rap about cells.
Yeah.
And that's how he learned some of the background he needed to know about cells, was because he was able to take the content and turn it into a rap.
Well, I want to piggyback off of what you said just a couple seconds ago about the traditional means of learning still having a lot of weight. And I think that's a good thing. I think that it's sort of it's popular sometimes, especially in our culture now, to think that the new thing is not only better, but it outshines and is superior to anything in the past, and so anything older than it should completely go away. And I would strongly disagree. What I see is that when something new emerges and you're seeing that it's working, I'll make space for it to work alongside some of the old. And so traditional education, in the sense of you know, lecturing and testing, and that can work, and I think it works for some students, but there are some that don't identify with that culture of learning. And so when we do discover through relationship building and through trying different things and experimentation, discover a way for them to learn that does fit their cultural identity, I think that it's wise to start developing some systematic support to allow those pathways to exist for those students too, alongside some of the traditional pathways. So for, you know, Colion Trochet, who was one of the first students to come into A3 House back in 2014 and start really finding his feet in hip-hop and music. And
voice as a poet.
Voice as a poet, as a dancer, and as a leader. Like, he was really, like, leading a lot of the other students from all different kinds of backgrounds to come and express their hidden talents. And so I think that... at that time, one of the biggest goals was, like, how do we get students to graduate who are otherwise going to drop out? And it served that purpose for Colion, because it gave him a reason to be in school. It gave him an attraction to school, and I think it really gave him a foundation on which to stand, and then see that, okay, I have an opportunity to succeed in my academics, to have positive and healthy relationships with my teachers, because they're now valuing my art and my creativity and allowing me to weave my creativity, my culture into their traditional lesson plans. And so I think that it was really a combination of some of the traditional pathways allowing for a new pathway to emerge alongside and cross resource for the benefit of this student to graduate.
So is, when you talk about project learning, again, we are talking about contemporary K through 12 education. Our guest today, Pam Moran, who is the executive director at the Virginia School Consortium for Learning, and Chance Dickerson, who's a facilitator at Murray High School. We're talking about project learning at the moment. Is in weaving project learning into the way that things get done, is project learning also knocking things out of the way? So when I have homework to get done, am I only doing some classes in the project method? Now you talked about history and you talked about English. Must I only do some homework in the project method? If I'm a student who comes from a family and I go home and my parents are like, "What is this crap? I don't understand this. I want you to do it this way." Because I'm sure that there must be some negative feedback. I don't understand why you do this. Where's that book? My kid doesn't have enough books. Give me some more books. You know, where's the ABC? Fill in those cells. I'm curious about that.
And, you know, it's a really interesting point. I'll have to tell you, the current superintendent, Dr. Matt Hawes,
he'll be on the show at the end of August, by the way.
And he will be taking the slot that I've occupied for a while with you, Rick. But, you know, he will be bringing, I think, an incredible message of support forward for the innovation work of this school system. He's been integrally involved in building out our profile of the graduate. I'm sure he's going to talk to you about freshman seminar, which is one of the linchpins in some of the work that's coming up in high schools in, over the next 3 to 4 years. And then I think that the other piece is that he led a comprehensive study of homework, policy, research, practice. And one of the things that emerged for us is that there's a lot of mixed research on homework, but it's pretty clear that the evolving picture of empirical research is that homework can actually start to work against kids as learners if it's too much, and that for elementary kids, pretty much there's not a lot of research to support that homework really makes a difference for kids other than reading and doing things where they get to apply what they've been learning in school. So, you know, cooking alongside, you know, a family member helps kids to really solidify math skills, or helping to work on something that involves measuring. But that, you know, that there's not a lot of research that really supports up that homework in the way that it's lived in kids' lives in this country for as long as it has, is as helpful to learning as we would like to think it is. We do see project-based learning as being something that is offering robust opportunities for kids to really take what they're learning and to become highly engaged in owning their learning and even having influence. And so I'll give you a great example that spans both English and history, and that is a project that we had funded this past year by the National Writing Project for kids, and the folks that wrote the grant for the Monument Project actually started writing that before the huge outcry and incredibly painful incidents of last summer and even somewhat into the year around the monuments of Confederate generals here. But what these folks did before we even got to that point was they said, you know, having kids understand the point and place and focus of memorials in our communities tells a historical story. And we want our kids to really engage in this project around memorials and monuments. And what the kids did, and obviously, you know, when you have a situation occur such as we've had as a confrontation of values in this community and across the country, that gets kids' attention. It creates a relevance for them that sometimes just canned history doesn't do. These kids became, across all of our high schools, actively engaged in studying who gets memorialized, why, and what's the story. And we had several hundred kids participate. They did field trips, were intensively engaged at Montpelier. They were at Monticello. They were looking at local monuments. And what they ended up doing was finding what I call the hidden history of our communities. And they built, sometimes virtually, sometimes it was that they created some sort of a mock-up of a monument or memorial for somebody whose story had not been told in a community, and they had to justify why, and they had to be able to tell that story. And so it was really fascinating to see those stories being told. They actually did that in conjunction. We had an exposition over at the Ix building in conjunction, Chance, with some of your support up with kids being there and right. Other people too. But those kids, when you stopped to talk to them about what they had learned, it was so much deeper in terms of their understanding of the issues around monuments, the controversies around monuments, and the successes of monuments in our country in terms of capturing history. And then they got to do their own based upon someone that they had researched, or a group of people that they had researched that they felt like should be elevated with a memorial or a monument. And it was pretty fascinating to watch. So that's what project-based learning is like. And you know, when kids do it best, they are able to influence not just their classroom and maybe classmates, but their school, their community, and even beyond that. Our kids that did the mental health project this past year, came to us in central office and said, hey, we think that there should be more focus on mental health services for kids in our schools. Kids are under a lot of stress today. They had a ton of research. We actually built an initiative in this last year's school division budget, superintendent's budget, put more focus on mental health services into our schools. Those kids didn't stop there. And this is a project that they took on. They took it to the General Assembly at the invitation of one of our legislators that represents Albemarle. They made a pitch, going back to the startup piece, Chance, made a pitch to the General Assembly. You had a bill written there. The bill passed. And I just read recently that there are two states in the nation that have really got a light that is shining on mental health services and curriculum in the entire United States by virtue of legislation. One is the state of New York. The other is Virginia. And it's in Virginia because of kids who took it on as a project. When I talked to one of the young people that was in that group at the end of the year, they're all graduating, and I said, so what's next? He said, we're not going to stop. We're going to college, but we still think that we need to have influence in this area. We're going to keep working on it. That's what lifelong learning is all about, is when you see those kinds of projects coming out of kids' work. So that's what this is to a great extent about, is it's a story of educators that are willing to take the risk and to see kids realize my voice matters. I own my learning, which is part of our Albemarle County vision statement, and I can have influence. And when we can have kids graduating from high school who believe those three things about themselves, the level of success and their empowerment as citizens is going to really ratchet up, I think, the dialogue in this country around who we are and what we stand for as people who are America.
I
get kind of passionate about that.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't tell.
And that's the wonderful thing about working in this county, is that there are a lot of passionate educators in a position to really make lasting change. There were two words that you used that stood out to me. The first was relevance, and the second was engagement. And so project-based learning, in my experience, both designing projects and, my role as a teacher, I don't see myself as the authority in the room with containing all the knowledge, and I'm the content deliverer. I'm also a student, so I'm a lifelong learner as well. And so for me, the relevance of the content is what motivates the student to receive it. And so if the content, whether it's algebra or history or economics, if the content isn't relevant to them, not saying that it's not relevant in a universal sense, because what is relevant regardless, but if they don't see its relevance, they will not receive it. They may memorize the terminology and know the definitions and remember the theories so that they can take the test and they're going to get good grades, but they will not receive the fruit of the content unless it's relevant in their actual lives. So project-based learning for me is if they're designing a project around their personal interest and it's tied to their cultural identity, then you can weave the content into that project, then they can discover the relevance of it, and that's what engages them.
So they give context to the content.
They give context to the content. And then the engagement piece, you were talking to those kids that, you know, they've already graduated, they're still pursuing this story. They're still looking for the details of this thing that they discovered through this project. That's engagement. I want engagement to go beyond the classroom. I don't want them to leave my room after 90 minutes and they never think about what happened in that room. So I think engagement should go beyond the classroom, beyond the school, and permeate into their lives. I think projects actually are a catalyst for that to take place. And so because it's connecting to who they actually are.
I had a principal say to me one time, Chance, that an elementary principal, he said, if the kids don't walk out to the buses in their parent cars every day, scratching their head about something that they're learning in school and thinking, I want to go home and learn more about this. I want to go home and do something because of this. I don't think I've done my job. I love that.
Our guest today, Chance Dickerson, he's a facilitator at Murray High School. And
Dr. Pam Moran. She's moved on and become the executive director at the Virginia School Consortium for Learning. Hang tight. We got 20 minutes left for you to scratch your head. We'll be right back. All right, we're back in action. As Dr. Moran was just saying, we're learning a lot from Chance today. I hope you are, too. So one of the questions that I have, and I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to learn from Chance and from Pam, as I always do when she's on the program. So you've opened up one of the things for the project style learning was to make sure you didn't lose that group of people, that group of students who might otherwise be left behind, the ones who were bored at school, who didn't get into the textbook style learning, correct?
Right.
So with the project style learning, is it possible that you're just creating a different style student who might be left behind?
That's that's something that we talk about, and the thing that I think is one of the hallmarks of, again, some of the most imaginative educators, the great observers, is that they've really come to know their kids as individuals. And in doing that, you know, we talk a lot about how do you make learning personal for kids, how do you differentiate it, how do you make sure that kids are hitting the mark in terms of the outcomes that we have, that we expect, you know, and being able to be a competent mathematical thinker, to be able to write in a literate fashion for the purposes that you need to write, being able to balance your checkbook, being able to think about, if I don't want to go to college, and we have more and more kids today that are not seeing college as necessarily the end game that my generation saw it as being, and want to do things. They want to maybe go out and start their own business. They want the skill sets to be able to go work in a field that maybe is not going to demand the same level of education. And we see that as a theme of some of the kids that Chance works with. But I would say that for kids that come to us who really love that more traditional focus in their classrooms, there's no shortage of that in our schools today. We still use a continuum of assessments. It's not just project-based assessments, but it's also the other kinds of assessments that have always been around, that teachers are, I guess, as much as anything, they have more tools to work with to try to capture every kid's love and interest in learning than maybe we saw 15 years ago. But it doesn't mean that we are Jim Collins said in Good to Great, that we have to look for the genius of the and versus the tyranny of the or. That, as Chance said, it's not this or that. It's how do we find the best of the and build that together in an integrated way so that all kids find success. You may have a good example of that.
I have examples. First, I want to say that's the best question anyone's ever asked me in terms of, and when we're talking about education and projects and students, that's the best question. That's a necessary question, because here's why. If our purpose of innovating education or changing education or reverting back to traditional education, if anything that we do in education is only for the sole purpose of getting a student from grade K to grade 12 and getting them successfully according to whatever requirements are issued by either the state or the school, and our whole purpose is to get them successfully through school and out of school, what does that matter? What have we actually provided them in terms of longevity, stability, and success in life? So I think the responsibility of an educator, it has to extend beyond school. And so if we're so to answer your question, if whatever you do, project-based learning or innovation or whatever, if it only just gets them to graduate and that's it, then they've been left behind. Even if they walk the stage with a degree, they've been left behind. Even if they go on to college, if they don't have a broader sense of who they are, and if they don't have tangible capital and intangible capital, meaning self-worth, skills, and the ability to acquire tools necessary to live a successful life, they've been left behind. And so I think that it's important that we recognize this, because what I want to avoid as a professional, as someone who works with children, I want to avoid just providing an experience that looks good and sounds good, but doesn't have any real value. And so
you want to make sure there's meat on the bones.
There's got to be meat on the bones. And so I think this is really where the entrepreneurial element of teaching comes into play. And I see it as for right now, I see it as a vital way of delivering content and creating projects and creating experiences for kids, because the entrepreneurial element is helping them develop a platform on which they can step into the world. Because what does a parent really care about when they're sending their kids to school? Every parent wants to know, can my child survive in the world? Are they going to be okay? Are they going to be able to provide for themselves? I think it's a question that I asked when I was walking through the hallways of Monticello High School as a student, was, how in the world am I going to afford a house? How am I going to raise a family? These were questions I had at age 16. And I think that the project-based learning is a doorway into a new type of discovery of, how do I get the tools I need for life? Lifelong tools. Here's an example. There's a student, I think it was the third year of A3 House. And at the time, I was teaching a couple sections of A3 House, and I was teaching a couple sections of economics and personal finance, which traditionally is sort of a dry class. You show a lot of slideshows.
Right, how do you do your checkbook?
How do you fill the check out? How do you do the tax forms and all necessary?
Wah, wah, wah. Right. How do you stay awake?
Right. I had a student who every day would come in and go straight to sleep. I'm going to tell two stories, if you don't mind, because they're both really important.
Save time for the book.
Yeah.
I promise.
Yeah.
I promise, Phil, but
here's what I'm
going to
tell you. This is why I brought Chance, because he's got wonderful stories. I could probably put, I don't know how many hundreds of teachers in this seat and
okay,
have them
let
do
me,
this,
let me
but
limit
Chance
some
can
words.
Do it.
No, you got
one
time for two. No. Two stories. You're good. We have time for two stories.
Okay. The first story is about a student who would come into my economics and personal finance class every single day and go straight to sleep. If he did have the energy to stay awake, he was up out of the seat. He was trying to bounce a basketball. He was fiddling with things. He had no desire to learn econ at all. And I didn't blame him. The way that I was delivering it was boring for him. Now, there were a lot of kids in the classroom that were doing just fine, getting straight A's. And I was talking to them. They didn't care about econ and personal finance.
But they were great compliant kids.
But they knew how. They knew the culture of that learning style, and they knew how to get it done. He didn't come from that learning culture. He was completely disengaged. I was actually disengaged even as a teacher, because it's not my learning style either. So second semester, I decided, all right, I can't take this anymore. No one really cares about what we're doing in this room. It's all about the grades. So I decided to do purely project-based learning. And so it was a simple challenge. Everyone in the class had to make $100 outside of school doing something that through some sort of business model. So they had to find something that they enjoyed doing and then try to create a business out of it to make some money. And so I sat down and interviewed each student and just kind of got to know, like, what do you like to do? What are you interested in? Let's try to design a project around this thing. This student said, you know, to be honest with you, I really like taking pictures. He had never used a camera before, but he just liked taking pictures. So I said, okay, well, he didn't even have a cell phone. So I said, here, take my Samsung, shout out to Samsung, and go outside and take pictures. So his project for the first couple of weeks was just go take pictures. Let's just start with that simple thing. Do something that you really like to do.
He started following me on Instagram. Instagram.
Right. And I told him, I was like, Dr. Moran is actually a phenomenal iPhone photographer too. Check out her Instagram. So he started following her and he started taking these pictures. Then the next phase of the project was, you know, so it's first is discover, let me know what you really like to do. Start doing it. Don't worry about like how it's going to do what, just start doing what you really like to do during class. And then we're going to design the economic principles around what you like to do. So he launched a photography business called Beckwith Imagery. We set him up with, he designed his own website. If you ever designed a website, you know how many skills go into doing that alone.
Yeah.
He acquired a camera from his dad. We designed business cards with him, and he started coming to school from the time that we launched this project. He started coming to school almost every day wearing a suit with his business cards in his pocket, camera around his neck, and he had a business plan. He was taking pictures, uploading them for sale to his website. He started going to the wood shop and building picture frames to frame his pictures, and he had an entire, his whole identity. He was no longer a student. He was a business owner. I literally witnessed him come to life. Someone who was asleep every day to coming to class early, trying to come after school, talking about what his passion for photography and his
interviewing
business.
Interviewing
yeah. Dr. Moran about photography and selling pictures. That's the first story. So that's why I like this project.
And in the meantime, he was learning about things like what do you do with the money when you get it? What
right.
things you have to think about?
Because we had to look at, all right, how much does your camera cost? How much does it cost? This website is not free. It's going to be like $100. How do you budget your money? The money that you get from your photos, what are you going to do with that money? You're going to put it back into new equipment? Are you going to put it into...
Right, your business model of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so... The economics and personal finance content was then being delivered through his personal interest, through his personal project. And he was engaged in it. So then when it came time for taxes, he's like, Mr. Dickerson, so I made this much money. What percentage of taxes do I need to pay for this? And that? So then when we were doing the worksheets that otherwise would be irrelevant. If you look at a W-2 form, it's irrelevant to you unless you have a reason for filling it out. So the economics and personal finance, and that's just one student, and I had 72 students in this class, and I would say about 60 to 70% were in the same boat. There's like, wow, like I actually have something to apply this economics and personal finance to. So that's the first story. And the other one's a lot simpler, but almost more dramatic. Student in my class, in my audio production class, doesn't like music, doesn't care about music or audio production at all. He likes cutting hair. So I'm like, all right, let's cut my hair.
How did he get in your class?
Because it's a what do you call it? An elective course.
Yeah.
So an elective course it's not a required course for graduation. And a lot of times, guidance counselors, because the student needs to take an elective course.
Right, because you need the credits to graduate.
You need an elective credit. Yeah. But it doesn't matter what it is. So
I don't care whether you like music. You're going to go take this class because
right. so
you need
a lot
it.
Of
I don't
kids.
Want art. I don't want
right.
else. That's less painful than
right. And they're like, oh, Mr. D, I see him in the hallways. He's a nice guy, so I'll take his class. And they get in the class, and they're like, oh, I don't know. I don't like music. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to force you to learn about microphones and to learn about editing and EQing vocals. If you don't like it, that's going to be torture. And I don't want you to feel tortured in my room. What do you like to do? Man, I like cutting hair. All right, cool. We get a seat. He cuts my hair. We get some students to film it. And that's like, this is part of a much more beautiful thing. But assigning roles to other students in the class. Hey, you're the filmer today. Hey, you're holding the boom mic. You're the audio guy today. Hey, someone else. Hey, can you edit this video for him after it's done? So they film his my haircut, and he posts it on his Instagram. And I'm not lying. 1 week from that day, there was a line of kids outside my classroom wanting to get their haircut in school. From that, he's like, he's developing this whole haircut business. His parents donated him their living room. So when I go to I still get my haircut with him. His name is Jason Blends. That's his barbershop brand. I go to his house and his living room is a barbershop because he's generating money for his family. So he makes, I think, between $500 and $1,000 a week. Cutting hair.
He's paying taxes on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, here's the other part about it, though. So
you don't know which county he lives in.
Chance, Chance was making a video about how did the maker work. We were doing an album, All Get Started. So I go in here. Here's how I meet this kid. I go in to get interviewed for this. And guess who's running the camera? Jason.
Oh, Jason Blinz, yes.
He was actually behind the camera.
Oh, when you came that day after
interviewing me.
Yeah.
Interviewing me.
Yeah.
So he went from being totally non-skilled in that area, though, to actually being able to do some of the work you were asking
him
to do.
So let's take the last few minutes, because this is all part of contemporary education. This is all part of textbook learning. And Dr. Moran, you are visiting all throughout the state showing this, how Albemarle County is doing what you do all around through other areas throughout the state, correct?
And I will tell you, I think that Albemarle has quite a wonderful reputation across the United States. And even, you know, we've had people from other countries that have, landed here and visited Albemarle. But one of the things that's pretty interesting is that we are not alone in this work. There are places all over the country that are doing very similar themes of how do you get kids to believe their voice matters, that they can control and have agency in their learning, and they can have influence. Because educators have learned from the research that when kids have that level of interest and curiosity, and we sustain that, they stay connected as learners. So if you think about Albemarle High School, and just a quick piece before I end on whatever the piece you want me to do next. If you think about Albemarle High School, in somewhere around 2007, we conceptualized putting the Mesa Academy in there. And we thought it would take 4 years to get enough kids with an interest in engineering to fill up the academy. We can't even accommodate all the kids now that want to be in the engineering academy, or health and medical sciences, or environmental studies, or Murray High School, and so forth. People are looking for customized opportunities. So you go to Albemarle High School, you got Mesa, you got an amazing arts program with one of the very best arts departments in the United States of America. You got the TEAMS program, which is an interdisciplinary focused piece where teachers are team teaching, you know, math and science and social studies and language arts. You've got the program, the A3 studio there, the A3 house there. You've got Trevor Przewski with his film studio. You've got AP courses and dual enrollment with PVCC and traditional courses. What kids have is an incredibly expanded bandwidth of opportunity that allows them to be the learners that they need to be to do exactly what Chance is describing.
Now, how far ahead of the rest of the state is Albemarle County?
Well, I think that you would find that there are high schools all over the state that are really trying to go after this new work that's come out of the General Assembly around Profile of the Graduate. I think that we have a track record and a deep reputation going back to the work we did under the former superintendent, Dr. Kevin Kastner, when he said in 2002, we can't let the passion of educators get sucked out of the classrooms because of No Child Left Behind. And we went after, at that point in time, something called Design 2004, which led us to our lifelong learning competencies. And we've been building on that ever since. And I think that's one of the big points of the book, that learning has to be timeless in its response to the changing needs of society, the changing needs of young people as they're moving out into a world that today is rapidly being transformed by technology. It's the rise of the smart machine age. Our kids, our teachers can't stay static, and our communities can't stay static. So when I talk about timeless learning per the book, what I'm talking about is a kind of learning that really transcends the current fad or the current work of the education community and says, how do we respond and keep learning timeless?
And that book will be out on August 7th.
August 7th. All right. You can find it all over the place on the internet right now.
All right. Thanks to both Dr. Moran and to Chance Dickerson. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Rick. As always, a joy.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.